Hello and welcome to the Nattercast for House of Cards Season 2, our two-part season wrap-up cast. I am Jason Shankle of Shankle Studios, and I am here with my subcommittee. Say hello, subcommittee.
Hello.
Hey, hello, everybody.
And we're here tonight to talk to you about House of Cards Season 2. We're going to sort of do a coverage of each of the episodes.
We're binge casting.
In a binge cast format for y'all. And before we do that, we have a little bit of our usual business. We are the Nattercast. You can reach us at www.nattercast.com. But where the real fun with us is on Facebook. If you go to Facebook and search for Nattercast, you will find a page, which we would appreciate if you came along and gave us a like on the page, and a group, which you can come along and join. And everyone there is talking about all kinds of shows, not just House of Cards, but Walking Dead and Mad Men. And we got Game of Thrones coming up and all kinds of
True Detective
mm-hmm. and wonderful stuff. We just got through with True Detective. We created a separate group for True Detective that got mobs of people coming into it, and they're coming to some of them are coming over to join us at Nattercast. So we're really pleased for that. It's called I Can't Stop Watching True Detective, which we couldn't do because we watched it like every episode like six times. We're just like so in love with that show. Wow. So, but we're here tonight to talk about House of Cards. Our last program note is we do plan on doing a coverage of True Detective in a couple of weeks, and then Game of Thrones is starting up for us in April, and we'll be doing a week-to-week cast on that. So before we get into our mini recaps on House of Cards, let's just what did people think about the season? Let's start with Mr. Littlefield.
I didn't think it was as good as the first season. I thought overall it was quite good. Mm-hmm. I was entertained. I think my favorite new thing, Jackie, was a good character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I liked her. And Molly Parker was very good. I thought some of the camera work was not so great. It was often way too dark.
Uh-huh.
And or poorly lit in other scenes. Just, you know, a little jagged. So considering this is David Fincher producing, who certainly knows how to make a good-looking movie, it's kind of disappointing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, overall, it was quite good.
Okay,
Mr. Yeah, I really liked it. Are we in real time now? Are we pretending to be a month from now? So yesterday was Labor Day or something? No,
we're releasing this tomorrow.
Okay, good.
We're caught up to real time.
It's been a month since I've looked at any House of Cards. Uh-huh. So just the last couple of days, I've been kind of binging on the episodes I'm going to cover just to recap and remember names and what's going on. And I was surprised at watching this closely how much I'd missed the little nuances, all the little subplots and sub-stories that are going on. There's a lot going on in this show, and it was done really well, and I'm a fan. I liked it.
Okay.
Danielle? I liked that it kept the same kind of mini-series feel, mm-hmm. where it felt like it was sections of the same movie or the same series. It just continually came all the way through. You could watch it as if it was one piece.
Yeah.
It just flowed nicely, just like last season in that regard.
I thought it was great.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was sort of uneven. There are parts of it that I liked better than last year. I really liked Claire this year better as a character than I did last year. I thought she was more involved in the story and more she really came to her own. Frank's story was less interesting to me than it was last year. It felt less plausible and a little sillier.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, there was a great article in Huffington Post. I want to bring that up right quick here. By Aaron Whitney, and it was like how House of Cards and Claire Underwood has changed the television antihero for the better. And the issue in the piece there was you know, we've had these antiheroes like Walter White, you know, and the, you know, who are largely male in a lot of these shows, and she's like the first real Walter White class antihero. We've had other female antiheroes like Nancy Botwin or whatever, but none of them have been quite as you know, Heisenberg-y as
She did definitely come into her own this season as being at least as evil as Frank, maybe more so, more conniving and willing to just destroy people to get what they want.
Absolutely. And I thought her performance, I've always liked it, but I thought this year was stellar. I mean, she was so controlled. Like every little move was so
and bad. I like they freed her up from her position at the nonprofit.
Right.
Because that
right,
was kind of a distraction to the main plot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It just kind of focused her character.
And they got her out of the affair with Adam Lanza, which wasn't going anywhere. And so then they put her directly into the story, which was real nice. Mm. So. Okay, so we're going to be doing like a sort of short just recaps of each of the episodes and kind of hammer through them. And we'll just get started. I'm doing the first episode. So, okay, so in the opening episode, we have a lot going on. We have Frank is now the vice president, so he's basically recruiting someone to be the whip, and that's Jackie, who's our new character. And her competitors are Webb and Buckwalter, and he shows her the files on them, and she actually starts, she like unbuttons her jacket. I thought she was going to like start fondling herself, and she's like looking at the data.
Really? I didn't get that impression. Okay. I didn't think of it that way.
Right. And then Frank doesn't want to move out of his, he doesn't want to move into the vice presidential office, so he's going to build his fortress of solitude on the taxpayers' dime. It's like, I will have the taxpayers reinforce my home and build a bunker.
Right, yeah.
Because I might need one later on.
Yeah, soundproof, bulletproof, bombproof, right. The whole, you know.
Why not?
He gets Meacham assigned to the Secret Service, which he was going to do that last year, and we were like, can you just do that? And the guy today on the episode is like, I can't just put a cop on the Secret Service. He has to be trained. Yeah. So there was that. Freddie tells his story. I think this is the scene of the episode for me, was Freddie telling his story about the hogs, the in no way metaphorical hogs.
Right,
that are like slowly
yeah.
bled to death and screaming in a soundproof chamber. But they make the best aging ribs. You know, it's like, okay. So that's Frank. What else we had? We had Lucas, Zoe, and Janine are playing Scooby-Doo around the whole thing there. They're just pretty convinced that Frank was involved in Peter Russo's death.
Right.
So they're going to start investigating. And then we have Stamper has got Rachel, who's the key to that story, under his thumb. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that begins that creepy relationship.
Well, it carries it on. It's
he comes into her apartment. She pulls a knife on him, yeah. and he just grabs it out of her hand, and he like goes from zero to raging bull pretty quickly with her. Yeah, poor Rachel. I have a lot of sympathy for her position on the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's has a weird character.
So, and then we got to see some of Claire's ruthlessness start up. So we have Jillian. She's pregnant by a married man, mm-hmm. right? And she needs. She's over 40, so she needs this medication to keep the baby from withering up, and she can't get it if Claire canceled her health care.
Right.
And she's like, she said, I will let your child, I'm willing to let your child wither and die inside you if that's what's required, but neither of us want that.
Yes, do we? Wow.
Am I really sort of the enemy you want to make? It's like, you can either be in charge of this charity that I'm leaving.
Yes.
Or I can wither up your baby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Take this awesome job I'm offering you.
Yeah.
Even though it means going back on your principles or,
right. Right. That was some awesome villainy, I thought.
That was a good line.
She's not that principled, though, if she's making shit up just to, you
right.
know.
Mm. Yeah. So that's like, how ethical is she? Mm. And that's the thing.
And fucking a married man and getting pregnant.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. She's no angel.
No,
not at all.
She wasn't perfect.
Yeah. Oh, and then she's confronted in the street by the wife. And
right.
it's like, oh, did she pay you a visit?
And then awesome.
And I love the line where she's like, what you're doing to me is civil, not criminal. It's like Frank and Claire are so aware of the lines.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like later on, he has this thing where it's like, it's almost treason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
which is politics.
And that's politics. That's politics. Yeah, that was a good line.
So we have a little thing where we want to do the aside of the episode. And there's only one in this one.
Yeah.
At the end, he says, you know, did you think I'd forgotten you? Perhaps you hoped I had, but don't waste your breath mourning Miss Barnes. Every kitten grows up to be a cat. And so that was the big event in this one, is Zoe Barnes.
Which
gets
I love that
bus.
They withheld the aside to the end.
Yes,
I love that.
She
love
gets
that.
Literally thrown under the train.
She gets literally thrown under the train.
But the question is, did he intend to kill her the whole time? Or was it an impulsive thing?
I think he had the plan to kill her the whole time.
I don't think it was impulsive. I don't think he'd start it from the beginning.
Because it's.
I think once
like
she
was,
became dangerous.
He was, I think he was
when
looking,
she ceased to become useful and was still dangerous, yeah. then it was like, okay.
I think she could have talked him out of it. I think if he was persuaded that she wasn't a threat, but that's why he met her there.
Because, I mean, it's so different in the first season when he kills Russo. He's very reluctant, and it was he really had no choice, or he felt he had no choice. And he clearly felt guilty about it. But with her, it was like, eh. You know, which kind of bothered me. He just throws her in front of a train.
But
you
did
know?
You think he felt guilty about Russo, or was he just acting?
I think
because there
he
was
did.
That moment in the Oval Office where he said, "May I have a minute?" When he found out, and that was all put on.
Yeah. I'd say maybe he liked Russo's ass better.
Could be attracted to Russo.
No, I do think, you know, he's not a cold-blooded killer most of the time.
Right. So. And, well, and I thought it was a little bit, you know, it's like highly public place for a killing. And it's the kind of thing, if somebody goes under a train, they shut down the whole state. No one's leaving the station if someone's gone under the
train. Right,
right.
Right,
and there's security, and he's got his, like, Kaiser Soze outfit on. He's got the hat and the glasses.
His 60s secret.
And it just, it didn't feel realistic. But,
no.
But
we know this from... And he somehow knew to be exactly where the camera would not be.
In the British series, they killed the Zoe character at the end of the first series.
And it was even more ridiculous. You threw her off a roof.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas it could only be you. At least here, there's other possibilities.
Yeah. So I don't know if I bought that.
Yeah,
it was. I think it was a way to get the audience to jolt the audience into paying attention.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So very different than Russo.
Yeah, I think we have a little feedback on that one. If you want to give us our first piece of feedback, Ms. Young.
Sure. And from one of our lovely new listeners, Stephanie Brown Anderson, Claire was the only part of season two I liked. Let's give it up to the ladies for bringing it, except for the Doug and Rachel. I found the weird relationship fascinating. Doug's a creepy guy, and I don't know what it says about me that he's my favorite character. I have a real problem with the president. I'd like to believe a person couldn't rise to that level and be so easily manipulated. Mm-hmm. And, my nose itches. And weak-minded, but I'm willing to believe that it's possible if that person is surrounded by the right advisors. This president didn't even have an advisor at all. It was just ludicrous.
Yeah.
So. Actually, he did. He had Linda, and he had...
he didn't have a political advisor. And the thing is, Linda was...
Tusk.
Yeah, Tusk. And I think it's actually part of the criticism that even Frank lays is like Linda was more of just a sort of an order taker for the president. And she wasn't really giving him solid advice, you know.
But look at George W. Bush.
It's true. Yeah, it can happen.
Yeah, I think he was easily influenced.
Okay, so we're on to Miss Danielle and chapter 15.
Alrighty then. So we open up with it being a rainy morning in Washington, D.C. as movers transition the Underwoods from civilian life in their private residence to the office of the vice presidency. And Francis is dressing for his private swearing-in ceremony while he's watching Rachel Maddow bash his appointment to the office as mediocre and speculating that he's just a fill-in until the next election. Christina's in place in the White House via Doug's maneuvering. And the first order of business is to play cat and mouse while whipping up his replacement. So he's toying with those that are interested in the position.
Right.
To his benefit, of course, always. And then he does vow to keep it clean and bring some civility to the house.
But all this while he's already made his pick, and it's neither of the two guys that are supposed to be in the running.
That's right. What I mean, the cat and mouse is just messing with him.
We're seeing the pattern of his play, which is to pit two people against each other when you've picked a third.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then they have the joint commission talks. And then Tusk makes a surprise visit, which infuriates Frank because he knows he's there to sway the president.
Mm-hmm.
Tusk is pushing his agenda with China really hard, and the president meets with him and Kathy, Secretary of State, and Frank. My aside of the week for Frank was, the president is like a lone tree in an empty field. He leans whichever way the wind is blowing, and right now Raymond Tusk blows far too strong from the west.
Yeah, I think that speaks to what Stephanie was saying.
So, talks with the Chinese start to break down as Francis is, you know, working every way and against each other to his benefit. And then, I did it by character, which kind of threw me off because
there's a Claire
plot before that.
Sure.
But later on, when I get to Claire's section, we'll mention how she hears a name from the past that disturbs her.
Mm-hmm.
And then at this dinner, General McGinnis introduces himself to Francis and makes a crass joke about dating Claire for 5 minutes.
That was
in
so
college.
Rude, man.
Yeah.
To your vice president?
And then, I mean, and plus I had the sense that he had assaulted her based on the way she had reacted.
Right.
Right. And so I was like, did you actually sexually assault someone and then get all sleazy at her
years
later in front of her husband? I mean, that's just...
And we dated for 5 minutes either means they had a quickie, they had a one-nighter, or worse.
Right, yeah, right.
It doesn't mean, you know, we were sweethearts
for
a short time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Or we were study buddies.
I took you to the peach tree dance.
Oh, jeez. Yep. And then Frances follows Claire into the bathroom, and she confesses that McGinnis was the one that raped her in college.
Yeah. And this was a great scene. Yeah.
It was a great scene. And now that he has to go pin a medal on this guy.
Right.
And it was a wonderful display of her ruthlessness. It's like, no, you have to follow this. We have too many plans that depend on everything.
And it also shows the strategic nature of the relationship.
Right.
She's very much the one. She trusts his decisions, but she's there to get him on track when he starts faltering or starts, you know, getting his eye off the prize.
She's like, Lady Macbeth, and you screw your courage to the sticking place.
Yep. Yeah. And then Frank starts learning the privacy limitations that come with the office when he tries to play his video game and finds out the internet's blocked for security reasons. Yeah. And then he tries to catch a smoke on the patio, and he can't even do that alone. And then in bed that night, Claire gives him the cold shoulder, and then she opens up to Frances about the rape.
Right.
And she says she has to strangle that girl every day. And tells him to use his anger in other ways instead of going after McGinnis.
Right. And I really get the sense that sexual assault made her hate her own weakness.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and just like that, it just...
Anything that makes her remotely vulnerable.
Anything that makes her vulnerable or weak or whatever, especially when after the withering your baby comment, she then decides not to have a kid. Right. She shuts that down, and I always thought it's like that's partially out of like I never want to be as vulnerable as that woman in my office was.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I don't want to have that weakness of pregnancy that loving a child will bring.
Right. And then Tusk and Frank continue to double team the president on the surface as while using Kathy as their puppet, while Frank works on the president to portray Tusk behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And then Frank forces Jackie to portray Ted in revealing his disabled love child.
Right.
And the president backs Durant at Frank's urging behind Tusk's back. And Tusk says he doesn't usually go against my advice without giving me warning.
Right. So now Tusk thinks he's had a president in his pocket, and now he's having to deal with Frank.
Well, he did for a long time, and he's realizing he doesn't have the control he used to. And then, so Claire steps into the busy social calendar of her new post, and like I said before, she hears a name from her past that rattles her, so we know that something more is coming there. Mm-hmm. And then Claire opens up to Frances about the rape. I already covered that under the Frances section. Okay, so I'll move on to Jackie. So Jackie sets her eyes on the whip position, and she starts lining up her supporters, including Ted, who she claims is like a father to her because he was a good friend with her father growing up.
Right.
And she's always been heavily involved with him. Lucas is working away behind the scenes. He's trying to make the police look into Frank's connection to Zoe's death, and they're like, look, you're crazy, dude. It just isn't going to happen. And then they show him the footage of this from the subway of her death and even play it frame by frame.
Yes.
And we learn that Frank has completely gotten away with it.
Yeah. You can't see a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's it for that one.
Well, then they have him going into the dark web. He meets up with a hacker.
Starts digging even
He starts going hacker.
Oh, sorry. I did have more Lucas.
Yeah, there's just a little bit more.
And Jackie has a really good line when she's talking to Ted saying, I'm the one who released the story about your daughter, your illegitimate daughter.
Right.
She says, I hate myself for it, but I'll get over it.
But I'll get over it, yeah.
Which sounds like something that Frank would say.
And we're really seeing that Jackie's a player, you know, like they are.
I found the rest of my Lucas notes.
Okay, you have more Lucas.
So Lucas's obsession with the conspiracy threatens his career.
Right.
Because they're like, look, dude, you're a mess. What's going on here?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Tom says his goodbyes at the Herald, Tom Hammerschmidt.
Hammerschmidt, yes.
And Lucas brings him in on the story.
Right.
As he's leaving. And brings him in on it.
He wants Tom to go continue doing the legwork.
To continue helping him do the legwork.
And he's expecting to get, like, a story that'll help him.
Right.
Oh, poor Lucas.
Right.
So, I wasn't so thrilled with, like, the Lucas storyline. I felt it was a little swordfishy, you know?
And you don't really think he's ever going to be a serious threat to Frank, or I certainly don't.
No, and the thing is, I'm not one of these guys. Like, you've listened to Bald Move, they were doing, they did the Instacast, which were kind of cool to listen to. And one of the things is, you know, how much do you demand that movie computers work like real computers? And it's like, well, really, computers are really boring. So movie computers can be a little dramatic, and I don't mind that. But when it's completely unbelievable, you know, and the the part I liked is that most of the unbelievable stuff is actually a sting.
Right.
Yeah. So which means you're an idiot. You know, and so that's one of these things where it's like, oh, I thought this was a reasonable sounding thing in your fictional world. It's not. It's just as stupid as it sounds to us.
Right.
And you fell for it. So you go, and I think that's one of the problems I've had with this, with both Lucas and the president, is surely you know that being the president is stressful. Maybe, you know, surely you know that computers don't work this way.
Right.
Right. And just having all the good guys be stupid was kind of, you know.
Yeah. To me, the first half of the second series, it was just really weird not having Zoe there anymore.
Oh, yeah?
You know, it just, she was such a part of it, right. You know, for right. so long.
And Russo.
And I think, and Russo, yeah.
Like
Russo, I wasn't in as in my face about him being missing uh-huh. is the way it was Zoe. Mm. And I think continuing the Lucas plot was a way of just not severing her storyline. Of, you know, like keeping
yes,
her mission it, alive for a minute.
It keep because otherwise Zoe becomes totally irrelevant at that point.
Right.
She's dead.
Right.
So I don't mind that they had Lucas fall in love with Zoe and follow it up. It just sort of felt like the actual machinations of the hacker subplot just
right.
felt like it was kind
right.
of silly.
Yeah, I got tired of looking at him and his little freak.
It was
head.
A little, yeah, that little yes. piggy.
He was really, a neat character, though. I liked him.
I liked him.
He was quirky and weird and
but
geeky.
But it was hard to buy because his place was so clean.
Wow. Yeah. There's no Cheetos and Funyun bags all over.
Well, he's an Apple hacker. He's not a Windows hacker.
Yeah.
His room is like Steve Jobs' Prius.
He's rich. Know. He can pay someone to come in and clean. But then he has to kill them every
yes,
time.
So it right. becomes a new person every time.
Well, he's
difficult.
Interesting. You wonder what his real background is. He's done some serious shit that got him in trouble because now he's basically a prisoner in his own apartment to the government. They're
right.
having him do all their dirty
that's
work.
That's kind of interesting.
Round up the bad guys. And we never do find out what that's all about. Maybe
well,
next,
I'm sure next year we're going to be...
There will be one more season? Still.
There's one. Yeah, there's one more season. They picked it up. Yeah. They were going to end it too. But
I thought so, yeah.
But now it's so obvious, Frank, the president, they're going to do it.
So. And he has to have his downfall too.
Yes.
I think he's got his come up.
It's
coming.
With Frank.
Just
being
win.
President and then retiring and that
bad guy
life.
Lives happily
now,
ever after.
You know, sometimes the bad guys win.
Not too often.
All right, so now we have Mr. Littlefield for
okay.
chapter 16.
And this is chapter 16, directed by James Foley.
Yeah.
And one of the big issue in this one is the president has decided he's going to push up the retirement age to keep the entitlement program solvent. Mm-hmm. And in a moment that... and Frank is talking with other Democrats about this, and in a moment that for all us liberals feels like, oh yeah, there it is, he says, well, what we'll do is we'll just give the Republicans everything they want.
Yes.
Of course.
This is the first thing in that felt like genuine Democratic politics.
Yeah, you
know. We will concede everything to the Republicans, and then we'll win.
Yeah, somehow. It'll look bipartisan
It'll
that
look
we
bipartisan.
Gave in.
Yeah,
what?
Totally. Oh, it's depressing.
Yes.
All right.
Anyway, meanwhile... Stamper and FBI Agent Green are meeting as a way to take down Lucas now that he's on the trail.
Right. So nah. Green is going to become the intervening. You look like a Dick Tracy villain.
Yeah.
Putty face or
yeah.
something.
Yeah, he does
oh,
have an odd...
Oh, he's Chief Broken Nose?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
that
he's
guy.
A weird looking
He's got a great face, though, for a
yeah,
thug.
Yeah, doesn't he?
Yeah, great
yeah.
thug face.
Good
he
thug
is,
face,
He
yeah.
is intimidating looking, definitely. So, anyway... And then Frank also brings Webb and Buchwald, who are the two guys in the running, who think they're in the
who
running.
Who think they're in the running.
Yes. To be his replacement in the House. And he also meets with the GOP majority leader in the Senate.
Hector Mendoza.
Hector Mendoza.
Who I call Senator Acevedo.
Because, yes. Right. And he also meets with this Tea Party leader guy
Huss.
Who is at first seems like he may be amenable to the entitlement changes because that's what the Republicans want, but then he's like, no, even that I can't agree with you.
I wanted to bring this up and I want to get your guys' opinion on it. What do you think of introducing like Rachel Maddow and what's his name, the
Stephanopoulos?
Yeah.
Not Stephanopoulos, but also...
Chris Matthews
and
Sean
Hannity.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then... And the Tea Party, because to
it
me...
It was the whole MSNBC lineup.
There's MSNBC and Hannity.
And Fox.
That's, and
yeah.
Fox. They had the Fox lineup. But also, the thing is... So here's my thesis. The Tea Party is a creature of the George Bush and Barack Obama administrations. It's
yeah.
the particular politics of the Iraq War and Obama's, you know, election.
Well, the Tea Party's Koch brothers.
Yes, but they created this out of response to to our politics.
Right. Yeah.
And so and also the format of MSNBC and Fox is around that stuff. And so like last year I didn't get a sense that they had a war on terror. Mm-hmm. I didn't get the sense that they had 9/11.
Right. They never mentioned
it. In their
it.
World, they don't mention it. It's not dominating their politics. And last year's politics were all meat and potatoes, Democrat and Republican stuff. It was labor and the military and business
education.
Right? The basic Republican and Democrat teams. Mm-hmm. And the politics was all old school stuff. Like, you know, just like you get, you know, too much union, there's too much business. Now it feels more like, well, why is there Tea Party?
Right.
You know, okay, there's a Democratic president. They might have arisen for any reason.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, it seems a little awkward.
The Tea Party, I don't associate that so much with the war on terror or terrorism as much as just a far, far right, you know, smash any entitlement. They're totally anti-welfare. They want none at all. It's an extreme extension of conservative politics.
Right, but they came into prominence because the Republicans lost some credibility with George Bush and the financial collapse, and they wanted to rebrand. It's the actual formulation of the idea Tea Party is very particular to the way Barack Obama was elected.
Right.
And it just seems like what were the politics in this world? It's not a whole big question. It's more like feels a little awkward to see our people, our commentators and our third parties in their world where they don't seem to have all these exact
same. It
might
have been better to have just alternate actors playing commentators instead of real commentators. It would have been a little less distracting.
Yeah. So anyway,
well, they had kind of a blend of that. They had
they have some news broadcasts with who were an actor.
But you know, the idea of having Rachel Maddow do a little stint on there. I think it's meant to add some realness to it, but it's been done before. It's kind of an old trick. We've seen it in
other movies, TV
shows. So I think it would have been fine without it. I don't, you know.
It's not a big deal.
It tied us to our own world in a way that felt a little surreal to me.
Yeah.
Just a little surreal. Yeah. But okay, anyway, that's my whole point.
Yeah, I agree.
yeah, I thought it was gimmicky.
As much as I love
Rachel Maddow, I still think it was very gimmicky.
Yeah.
And nobody gets sandbagged on Chris Shays. How pathetic are you?
Yeah, really.
You want a Chris Shays show, you get sandbagged by the
and I don't like giving Sean Hannity more work than he already has.
Exactly.
That's how I feel.
Although it is interesting watching Hannity and Maddow and Tweebird, what's Matthews. Apparently these guys can read anything. It doesn't have to be real.
Yeah.
You know?
They sounded
very genuine.
Yeah, that's true. They're
to their
reasonably,
material. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Anyway, so meanwhile, Lucas is still investigating and still looking on the internet.
Uh-huh.
And he has a kind of ridiculous scene where he talks on a laptop with a weird puppet.
Yes.
And a jig.
Yes.
And I don't.
Yeah, more swordfish stuff.
Right? Yeah, you know, it's kind of goofy.
It was kind of cute. He's like, somebody come in and fix my computer? Because it's like glitching out. Then the porn shows up. It's like, oh, never mind.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But then when it ends with that picture of Zoe, it's like, ooh, that was
kind
of spooky, actually. Claire didn't have a heck of a lot to do in this episode. She does hire in a new assistant named Connor, who seems like a good guy.
Lucas does meet the hacker. He meets Hieronymus Bott.
Oh, yeah, eventually does meet the hacker.
Right, yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
So he says, I don't want to die, basically.
Yeah. Let's see. Rachel, we see the former prostitute is now working at the phone bank.
Right.
And eventually she meets on the bus this woman named Lisa because Lisa likes the music she's listening to on her iPod. Hey, give me that.
Yeah, earbud sharing on the bus. Can I get a round of opinions on that one?
Yeah, complete stranger.
If it's the earbud that goes into the ear, no. If it's just an ear covering.
No, it's earbud in the ear.
Forget it. That would be weird.
No, they don't go all the way in. Plus, I will tell you, my first lesbian lover, I met her on a bus.
Well, did you share earbuds?
They didn't have them then.
Okay.
Would you have shared earbuds?
What did you share?
Yes. We had other kinds of buds.
I guess that's a different cast.
We shared addresses.
Oy vey.
So that was kind of an amusing scene. Well, especially since it ends with the woman who approached her, giving her this pamphlet for a religious place, and you're like, oh no.
Yeah,
see,
that
threw me. I saw the lovers thing coming right away, but you know, the I'm a Jesus freak come to
you
church.
Can be both.
I didn't see that coming.
I guess you can be a lesbian Jesus freak.
She's not incredibly Jesus freaky. It's kind of like a Unitarian little place.
It actually looks pretty.
Still meeting somebody, and one of the first things you say is, come to church with me. That's
right. That's a sure sign.
In Washington, especially.
You know, yes.
You burst into flames.
And so meanwhile, the deal Frank and the president made with the Republicans about pushing up the entitlement age gets scorched by Haas, the Tea Party black nut job, basically is what he is. Let's see.
But that leads us to our big scene, though, with... We're doing some light construction.
just like Claire and Frank on the show, we're having a bunker made in our house for the VP.
Siona said it is working up a lumber cast for us.
Yeah, there you go.
So this is where we had our big scene with Frank, flexing his muscles,
yes,
president of the Senate,
which was a good scene.
Right. So you have a Democratic president of the Republican Senate.
Yeah,
and he's got calls the sergeant of arms calling
to bring them back in. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, even though one scene where they say, "Okay, give the Republicans everything they want," seems so Democrat. The scene where he's like, "Go, bring them here now, arrest them." That's so not the
That's
Democrats.
So not Democrat. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like we need him.
We need this Harry Reid to
filibuster schmilibuster. You're doing this.
Somebody get Harry Reid a copy of this.
Exactly. That would be awesome. And let's see. Turk pretends to support Frank.
Tusk. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Tusk. Yeah. One problem I have with this season: there's maybe too many scenes of Tusk and Frank yelling at each other. I got a little.
The actual machinations of the whole Frank plot involved way too much Raymond Tusk.
Yeah.
Just bluster.
Right. Yeah. Tusk bluster. I don't trust you. Yeah, you betrayed me. Okay, we get it.
Right. And so this is like, this is in my notes too. It's like Raymond had the first of many Raymond pretends to support Frank, and then Frank pretends to support Raymond.
Right.
Then they yell at each other and say, "I don't trust you," and then they pretend to support each other.
Yeah. Yes. And that's pretty much it.
Then we have a State of the Union address.
Right. The president gives a State of the Union at the end, and that's that.
That's cool.
But we had the best scene was, of course, Frank.
Oh, did we get to Jackie talking to the reporter and then going, she does her tattoo masochism?
Oh, well, okay. That wasn't necessary, but it was kind of a fun scene.
Well, the tattoo masochism
was very necessary.
The tattoo masochism is necessary because
you
get a lot of her character. Well, let's let it see on.
Okay.
We saw that. She's there, like.
She liked the tattoo. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, what's really important to it is it's giving us a character layer.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's really important to the high players here that really want this whole presidency thing,
mm-hmm,
is to be able to manage your emotions,
mm-hmm,
and to be able to sublimate them. And she does it through this is not unheard of. This is totally something I've heard of many times. The tattooing as a masochism to cancel out other pain is completely classic. It's
like
very
too, right?
It's totally realistic. It makes sense when she's coming from this past of, you know, this war stuff and those emotions around that, and now she's trying to do this job that requires her to have incredible armor on.
Mm-hmm. She just backstabbed her father figure.
Yeah, it's like almost like a cognitive training method thing. Yeah. No, it's really important, and it was completely realistic.
It was a good scene, yeah.
And you see a lot of parallels, too, with her and between her and Claire.
Yes.
Especially physically, she has that same kind of posture that Claire has. So,
you know,
she holds herself very high and, you know, like that kind of thing. And so Claire, we see, has a little masochism that she goes through to just bite her way through this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That she does, right? So, yeah. Alrighty. Okay, so we're moving on, I believe, to Mr. Gary.
Chapter 17. And this episode is, a lot of it is whipping to get support for this, to avoid the government shutdown, which is hinged on this raising the age of the
retirement age. Yeah.
The retirement age and all that. So Remy and Frank and Jacqueline are working together to whip votes toward that. We've got Claire and getting ready for her TV interview, and Connor is kind of prepping her, asking her the tough questions, making her go over them time and again so they sound natural and real. And so we're in the war room, and they're talking about who owes who a favor. They're trying to, they're short some 30 votes to get this thing done. So they're like,
right,
you know, who owes me this, who owes me that? And they're moving. It's cool because they're moving names from like one side of the board
right
to the other.
And yeah, the leaning yes, leaning no, definite yes, definite no.
Yeah.
Frank
what
is good at
I,
that.
Yeah, what can I do for this guy to get him on board?
That's why they call him the whip.
Yep.
And there's a guy named Donald Blythe who leads the more liberal wing of the Democratic Party, and they're totally four square against raising the age.
Right.
So, and I think Frank has recently thrown him under the bus for something else. Mm. So Frank calls him to the office. He clearly does not want to be there. He comes in and he's very cold. He offers him a drink and he says, "No, I don't drink." And he offers him a coffee. He says, "I don't drink caffeine." And he says, "Well, have
decaf,
some air."
He says, "Decaf still has caffeine in it."
I guess he's a Mormon or something.
Well, he's like, "Decaf still has caffeine in it." At that point, you really are.
Yeah.
You're like, something going on.
He says, "Finally, breathe some of the air."
Yes, why don't you?
Right.
I believe that, so he lobbied him for support for the vice presidency, or maybe for
Secretary of State, I think.
It was Secretary of State last season.
They said that.
Okay. And he got that support in exchange for, you know, "You'll come to me for advice," and for, you know, and Frank has ignored him ever since.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so, got what he wanted out of him.
Right.
So he makes it clear that this is going to be a very short meeting. I'm here just because you asked me to come, and I'm not backing you on this.
Right.
Frank schmoozes him a little bit, gets him to stay and chat. They at least give him a seltzer water, which he shows up.
So they end up. Can you get the anthrax thing?
Yeah. End up stuck in that room together because down in the mail room.
Now, I didn't catch this in my second watch. Did Frank set up this anthrax scare to imprison himself in a room with this guy?
No, because later on, the same guy set a bomb near their house.
Oh, it's that guy. Oh, it's the anti-abortion guy.
Right.
Right. Okay,
so
good.
It's the same guy.
I just couldn't link up the anthrax.
But when I watched it the first time before that guy came up, I thought, did Frank do this on purpose? But no.
It seems like a thing Frank would do, but he had this vote coming up that he wanted to get down to. So he was upset that he wasn't going to be able to leave.
Thanks for clearing that. I didn't have that clear.
So, so there's a aide or an intern opening mail, and poof, a big fluff of powder comes out. So, the
well
place is
scene.
Locked down. It's a really well done scene. This poor girl is sitting there like, oh,
Oh no,
I'm waiting for the Silkwood showers.
And someone comes in. And someone comes in and says, "Everybody else, get out. You don't move."
Yeah,
it's like, oh,
yeah. She's like, "Great, I could have joined the Peace Corps, but no."
Right. Yeah.
I think the chief of staff. Who's doing that?
Yeah.
But
suddenly, there's guys in the full biotech suits, respirators around, and they lock Frank and Donald Blythe into Frank's office. So they've got hours together now.
Great.
And one of the things Frank says in the beginning is, normally, all I need to sway Donald Blythe is patience and time. Neither of which I have right now.
Good one.
Well, he ended up having a lot of both. But Blythe also has a wife. He's an older guy. He's in his 60s. He's got a wife with Alzheimer's.
Right.
And so he's freaking out because if he doesn't call her pretty frequently and it's got to be him talking to her, not anybody else, she doesn't know what's going on. She freaks out. Mm-hmm. So, and Frank is, this whole time they're together, he's looking for little chinks in the armor that he can work this guy.
Because
he needs the votes. He needs all this 28 votes that this guy can get. And the guy hates him. He knows what he's like. He knows he's a manipulator. There's no way Frank's going to get to him. And he very slowly, very, you know, tiny baby step at a time, kind of...
Works the wife.
Works the wife angle. He works this angle, that angle. And a couple of times... Blythe kind of shakes his head and goes, "Yeah, I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. God damn it, I hate you. I hate that I'm in this room with you." And then he's back to square one, and he, you know, has to kind of gingerly creep back.
It's like puppy creep.
Yeah.
Like our dog.
Oh, Tyrion's little puppy creep is really cute.
Yeah, he'll keep trying it. If he gives
he does this little thing. You guys haven't seen it yet. Especially, it's like when we're in bed and stuff. But he'll do this thing where he'll pad up, and he's like kind of get... Oh, it's just really
up into face, and you're like, "No, down by feet," and you're like, "No, okay, I'm creeping up to waist."
slowly,
you can't notice me.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, so while Frank and Donald Blythe are stuck in the room together, Claire is getting ready for her TV interview, which Frank was supposed to be in on, but he's stuck now. So they're deciding, do I go ahead with it? Do I not? And she decides she's going to go ahead with the TV interview.
Is it Ashley Banfield? Is that who the who was the reporter? I think it's Ashley Banfield.
That's who it was.
Yeah,
and
Manchie Schmarmy.
She was pretty smarmy in this. But she decides, okay, I'll go forward with it. And they do talk by phone. The White House is on lockdown. There's no phones, no nothing coming in and out, just in case it is a real threat. But they manage to talk by walkie-talkie somehow. The security guys get this done, and. Frank tells her, she says, "No, go. I'm going to go ahead and do it. Just, it'll be fine." And so they start the interview, and Ashley is talking, and she's very charming, and they're sitting in the Underwood's house, so it's very comfortable. And she goes almost immediately into, oh, you were a rich girl.
Right.
You were privileged. You were this. You were that. Daddy was...
Your dad helped fund Frank's campaign.
Your marriage was really one of convenience.
And that was totally McCain.
It's a number of
It's a bit of
people,
a McCain.
You know, or John Kerry, too.
Yeah. Kerry, yeah.
That kind another of thing one. Happens.
Heinz Kerry.
Yeah.
Kerry's a catch-up man.
Yes.
He owes his money to catch-up.
That's right.
That's right.
And so it's getting really uncomfortable for Claire, and she's kind of holding her own, and she takes a couple of breaks. Finally, the subject comes up about kids, which Connor had rehearsed with her how to answer, you guys don't have kids. And she gave the line, and Ashley says, you've given that answer before. And she goes, well, it's because it's the truth. And she says, no, you've given that answer word for word before.
Yeah.
And, you know, the discomfort comes, and they take a break, and Connor's telling her, look, cut it off now. You're not going back out there. And she says, yeah, I'm going to go finish this. And she has this plan, which is brilliant. She talks about having been pregnant, which I think was the question that came up before the break.
Have you ever been pregnant?
Right.
Have you ever been pregnant?
And she kind of hemmed and hawed and dodged.
She admits to Connor she'd been pregnant three times.
Yeah.
She had three abortions.
But he says, no, you're going back with one.
He's like, no, you got to be one. So
keep it to one.
Birth control is not...
Yeah.
But this candidate that Frank had been running against brought it up in a campaign that she's pregnant and now suddenly she isn't. Uh-huh.
Right.
And she says, yes, that was true. We were on birth control. It failed, and I terminated the pregnancy. But what she tells to the reporter was, I was sexually assaulted by General Brady McRaper Pants.
General McRapey.
McRapey.
Yes, yeah. Dalton McGinnis. I call him Rapey McRaper Pants.
Yes. He's pretty evil.
And did you get the shot of him while the interview was playing?
Yes.
In his office?
Yeah.
The phone starts ringing in the front of his office.
Your wife's on the phone. Yeah.
But,
no, I was afraid it was going to end with him blowing his brains out, but I'm glad they didn't do that.
Well, it still might.
Yeah, you never know.
But so she says, yeah, I was raped. I terminated my pregnancy because I was the victim of a rape. And it's brilliant because she takes control of the interview back by doing this.
Right.
She casts abortion in a new light. So she totally shifts the frame of the debate on abortion to rich, powerful women can get raped as well and get pregnant and not necessarily want to be the mother of the child of their rapist.
Right.
And it's kind of a brilliant lie because there is a grain of truth to it. She was raped. Mm-hmm. She did have an abortion. It's just not
the same.
Not the same thing.
And it also makes the interviewer look like a sadist the whole time.
It does. I said it turned the table on the interviewer, and it gets back at McGinnis and wrecks his life.
I do have to give some credit to Ashley Banfield to allow herself to be depicted this way, because at least the other media personalities were playing themselves more or less straight up. Yeah. This is a really...
She looked bad.
She looked really bad here.
Yeah,
and it's her. She's not playing some reporter. She's playing Ashley Banfield.
Yeah.
Right.
So she gets some credit for like making herself look.
It seemed a bit odd to me though that it seemed
maybe
like
she's
this
trying
was
to break
be,
into acting.
This looked like it was set up to be some kind of typical puffy interview. You know, I mean, how often does an interview with the vice president's wife get this dark?
Right.
Normally these things are very puffy.
But it made it look like her hand was forced.
Yeah. But I mean, the fact that the interviewer suddenly went straight to, so this guy said you were pregnant and then you got an abortion during the campaign.
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay.
Well, she touched on a lot of, you know, like every criticism there is of the Underwoods she touched on and wanted,
your marriage is highly constructed and controlled.
Yes. Right.
So, and then they got another bonus while she was out having a break and a smoke. This sweet little girl calls in, and he raped me too. So here's another person for the Underwoods to crush and destroy and use to do their ends. Yeah. So the interview ended up turning out well for her. The anthrax scare turned out to be nothing after finally hours and hours. Frank didn't get Blight's vote, but they did, and he promised him more Alzheimer's work and whatever.
Yeah. Right.
They ended up finally with, you know, I know you're not going to vote for this, but I respect you because you're a man of principle. He kind of smoothed that water a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
He's still going to try to work that vote out of him, or at least some of the people he controls.
I think they left respecting each other, but he's not. This guy's like doesn't trust. He's burned once by Frank, and I think that we, he represents something that the danger that Frank is in.
Yeah.
That you can burn somebody and they will never trust you again.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you they end up liking you or anything else, they just will never trust you again.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. So he's got to be careful how he burns bridges. You can't always rebuild them.
Right.
Right.
So there's a scene in the Hack Shack, Gavin, the super hacker, and Lucas
from, I like this one.
From Slugline.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool scene. There. Now Gavin is setting Lucas up. And Lucas doesn't know it.
Right.
Lucas thinks he's going to like plant this chip in a computer and it's going to do something magical and bring Frank down.
Right.
Right.
I didn't quite get where, you know.
Well, what it is the hacker will be able, if you go into the basically the server farm, I'll be able to hack all the, like, Doug Stamper's phone and Frank's phone and all of the people you want to look into. I'll be able to hack them.
Right.
Okay.
I can't hack them unless I can compromise the firewall of their, you know, their information provider,
right?
Who's AT&T? So go in there and do this for me.
And
the
put
plan,
this little thumb drive,
which you can't do. And I'm sitting there going, "Oh, you can't do that." And then later on, we find out, of course, you can't do it.
Well, but no, but then he does.
You know, he does. No, but it's all.
It's not a scam. Remember at the end.
Oh, that's right. He does actually have the thing.
Yeah.
Well, he has compromised the thing. We don't know that that's how he did it. He did.
He says that's why.
He had a text from Broken Nose. Knows his wife.
Right.
No, yeah. You can compromise those servers. You can't with a thumb drive. Lucas didn't do that for him.
Oh, okay.
Because he gets busted in the middle of trying.
He says he did, but maybe he's lying.
Okay.
He got in some other way.
Yeah.
Anyway, what else happened in this?
But no, there's the slapping.
Oh, yeah.
He just slapped. Like, yeah, I'm just going to...
The geek character
geek slap you. Yeah,
me.
Yeah.
And, well, and his guinea pig.
I always like a good man slap. In anything.
Okay, let's see. The hacker boy wants Luke to know. Oh, yeah, he also says to Luke, he's frustrated and he slaps him because Luke's like, okay, we've, you know, chattered. I'm going home now. Yeah. And he's like, no, you're not. You're hanging here with me. You're going to watch every line of code I write. You're going to know everything. So if we go down, we're going down together.
Right.
And
that's another, actually, little reflection on Frank and Claire and the conspiracies like with Jackie and Tusk. People keep saying, you know, if we fail, we're all going to jail.
Right.
That's kind of the way that these things work, is that none of us can afford to let any of this fail.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Cool.
Okay.
All right, so I think that's on to me then, unless you
have
something
else. All right, yeah, I think we're
over.
Before me, I think we have a little more listener feedback. We're just going to weave it right on in.
Charlotte Britt Rogers. Just finished the first episode, even though it's sunny and warm here today. I know I should be out in the sunshine since I've been whining about the cold. But Frank Underwood, yes, fuck you, sums it all up. But oh my God, who is more ruthless, Frank or Claire? They both scare me. Okay, I desperately need some vitamin D, so I'm off to skip in the sun. And bringing the Z, Philip Zierman. I think they timed Zoe's departure pretty well. Considering how much of the preseason hype featured her, it served as a nice shock for people who hadn't seen the original UK series, and also a reminder that all of the characters on the show are pretty much evil.
Pretty much evil. And it's something I'd forgotten to mention in my recap of the first episode, is the FU hand on the FU cufflinks.
Yeah, that was funny.
That Meacham gets him the FU. No, Meacham, fuck you. But not for about 10 episodes. Okay, moving on to chapter 18 here. So we start off with our wonderful cold open introduction of Xander Fang, wherein we learn that Asians enjoy freaky, freaky sex.
Yeah, that wasn't really
necessary. He's got the bag on his head. He's got the boy and the girl doing the double teaming blowjob. He's hyperventilating into a plastic sack. He's just deeply...
Yeah,
this is a little more Japanese than Chinese.
Well, stereotypically, yes.
You know?
The fact that it's supposed to be like a big deal that he takes the bag off his head. My God, he's Asian! That was kind of like, is this offensive? I don't know. It's
like... And so now we've been introduced, of course, to something... It's just funny that nobody else mentions it throughout the whole series. Tusk and Fang. And Fang.
And at one point...
And Claw Remy, and Nostril.
Remy says to Frank, you don't want to lock horns with Tusk.
You don't want to lock horns with Tusk. You don't want to lock tusks
laughs,
with Fang.
Yeah.
So the whole Tusk-Fang thing is pretty
Did
funny.
You notice sometimes Tusk calls him Fung?
Fung,
yeah.
Yeah,
between
Fang
and Fung.
But it's Tusk and Fang.
Yeah.
Tusk and Fang.
We learn that Fang is... So he's like a Chinese bazillionaire. He's deep into the party. His father's like a high level commie or something like that, but he's got a bunch of money on his own. So he's kind of like almost like an Arab prince and a Chinese communist combined into one idea.
And is he Tusk's connection for plutonium?
Does that well for the unobtainium? Yeah, I forget what they call it. It's some mythological.
Strontium. Strontium.
Barbara Streisandium or something like that.
You know, yeah, that kind of embracing the
unobtainium.
There's
so unobtainium. Fang is the connection for unobtainium.
Yes. Okay. That Samarium, is that what you guys mean?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That Tusk needs. It's apparently a heavy earth metal that's used in nuclear power production. Right.
Sure. Why not?
Basic idea. Okay. 5 seconds of science. Nuclear power is all based on neutron release, which can't be contained with a magnetic field, so you need big, powerful, heavy things like water to absorb the power. Hmm. And that's what heavy metals are useful for in nuclear power, because it breaks them down so quickly that you want stuff that's very strong.
Uh-huh.
And they can take a lot of heat. All right, anyway.
Thank you.
So we find out that Feng is under a death warrant in China for political corruption, which they take very seriously in China. So basically, this is going to be Feng becomes kind of the pawn that Tusk and
the man Frank with no country.
Yeah, the man with no country. Meanwhile, Frank is at a civil war reenactment.
oh, that's right. Yeah,
you know, which is a very important. This is
the guy who takes himself too seriously.
Yeah, the guy who's so intense he refuses to say his real name.
Augustus Underwood.
He's supposed to be his
his great great grandfather. Yeah. Great great grandfather.
You know that to be fair though, that would be something to find out that your great 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 grandfather.
Well, it wouldn't be surprising to find out they fought in the Civil War if you're from the South, but he said no Underwoods ever fought in the Civil War. It's like, oh, yes, I died right over here. But
yeah.
And these Civil War guys are like that. It's like they know where the bullet went in and what time. It's like, where'd
they're
you
like
get all this
Titanic
information?
Titanic maniacs.
There was a pile of body parts at the end of this fight. There's no way you know exactly when you died.
Yeah,
you know, they make this stuff up, I think. But he's reenacting, and he's down there with Stamper. And so they use this as kind of cover to let Fang... They're back channeling with Fang basically, and Stamper meets with them, and Fang's got this like $5,000 drink that Stamper slaps out of his hand.
Yeah,
that was $5,000. Like, I'll write you a check.
A $5,000 drink. Now, what can be in that?
Yeah. And basically, and Fang says, you know, don't. This is something I think is important on Stamper. Don't overthink your place. You're just an errand boy, and I think that is part of the skeleton key of Stamper's self-esteem issues throughout the rest of the season. You know, is that he really is just this errand boy, and he sees that, and he's seeing other errand boys get hired around him who are younger and more errandy. You know, and I think that's we actually had
my theory.
Yeah, let's hear that.
I'm completely convinced that Stamper is in love with and has been for a long time with Frank.
Yeah, romantically, I think. Yeah.
Maybe.
You know, that wouldn't surprise me.
He feels that kind of
That kind of devotion only comes from that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think there's something to that. I don't know if they ever hooked up.
I think they boinked.
They might have, but...
Because... All right, so where I get this is the first few episodes of season one, when you see their relationship established, they're incredibly intimate.
Uh-huh.
You know, they have nothing... It's just like with Claire... And Claire and him to say that we hide nothing from each other. Him and Stamper hide even
less. Yeah,
I mean because they're sharing murders and all kinds of shit.
I would not be surprised if that comes out in season 3.
You can
three.
Only be that connected, I think, if there's an emotional longing there.
No, you've persuaded me on that one. I think.
Sure. Well, what's his longing for Rachel other than having to completely dominate her? There's some love interest there, I think.
Yeah, but his thing with her is that he wants her focused on, because he wants to control her.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he has any love for her.
Really?
Oh no, I think he wants to control her, and he's got mommy issues.
Yeah,
he projects on her. I think he doesn't want her to have her lover, because then that means someone else may have more influence.
Right.
Especially if he knows how influenced he is by his relationship with Frank.
And he's very explicit about that. He goes to the AA meeting and says, I'm involved with a woman I shouldn't be involved with, and she's like the bottle. I just keep wanting more of this contact, but it's not romantic. She's like my daughter or my mother. Huh. And then he says, that's really fucked up. He's even aware that he's looking for... either a mommy connection or to have a daughter to control, you know, and it's not. And she, when she tries to sexualize the relationship, he I think he has sex with her again, but he's not really interested.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't. He
well,
doesn't
the first time he has sex with her, he pays her for a blowjob.
That was the only time, though.
Right, and that was part of a job.
And it was for pay. There was no romance to it.
It was for pay and was also part of him working her as a
part of his dominating her, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I think I think you're completely on about that one. I'd buy that totally.
Yeah, he's heavily closeted, you know.
Yeah. I mean, he might be bisexual. Yeah. He might be into women, too. He's in love with Frank, though.
Yeah, he's in love with Frank.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Frank meets with Fang.
Because he doesn't seem to have any love for... he just tolerates Claire.
Who, Frank?
Mm-hmm. No.
Stamper.
Stamper. Yeah, he doesn't... No, I don't think he's involved with Claire at all.
No. But that's part of... I'm in love with this guy.
Right, yeah.
And I have to put up with his girlfriend. His weird...
Right. This is why we're moving on to Meacham, because Meacham can go both ways there with them.
Yeah,
Meacham likes the whole party.
Meacham's younger and studlier and isn't whiny.
Okay, the good news is you get to have a three-way with Robin Wright. You want to hear the bad news?
Kevin Spacey's in there, too.
Okay, so where are we? So Frank meets with Fang, and,
Frank and Fang.
Frank and Fang.
And basically lay out this political challenge that they're going to have on between... He wants some safe ground. And he says there's no hallowed ground for losers. Fang tells him that, which I thought was a great line. And then Frank buries his ring after arguing with Tusk again over Fang.
Right. Yeah, that was an interesting
And then he buries... can I get a read on burying the ring? They
his
never really
talk.
His class
ring?
It's his class ring... But it's on this battlefield where he just found out about his relative being
right,
there.
Right.
No, I thought that happened when he did the reunion with the boys, that they all, when he was drinking with his old lover in the library and all that.
Right.
I thought all four of them had buried him in like a time capsule.
No, we show him, they show him burying it here.
Yeah, there's much later.
There's a shot. He takes off his ring and puts it in the hollowed ground.
In the hollowed ground of the...
I don't know.
Maybe.
And I don't quite have the
part
answer.
Of his great-great-grandfather, who knows?
Connection to it. But then he does his aside where he says, he has no sense of connection to the Confederacy.
But he says that before he found out that his father, or great-great-grandfather, fought in the war. But so
his thing was
his
like...
Mind.
He says, but I think this connects with him. Avoid wars you can't win and never raise your flag for an asinine cause like slavery.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, make sure that you can win and make sure that it's a war that's worth winning.
Yeah.
But still, it obviously affected him somehow because he goes on this big thing about making the Civil War model table thing.
Yeah.
So he's affected by this, and I think it is the great-grandfather. Well,
but he also needs a filler because he can't play his video game.
He can't play his video game. And the other one thing he says to Fang is, the way that the North won the war was raw attrition.
Plus that.
More
plus
guys.
That
right. It's all it takes. More guys than willing to sacrifice.
Kings play those.
More soldiers.
That model set.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's true. It's like a kingly thing to do.
So they didn't get the internet hooked up in Frank's new house?
They said for security reasons he couldn't be, it was in a secure connection, so they shut off where he couldn't play his game online.
Yeah.
His stress reliever
and
at the end
in
of the day.
That one scene, they
and that's why we have to fuck Meacham.
Millions of people from ever getting into politics.
Yeah.
How many kids are like,
probably
no!
The people you don't want in politics anyway.
Yeah. Probably, yeah.
So then the Claire subplot we have, she works out an abortion timeline with Connor. He's got his notepad out. Okay,
yeah,
now first abortion. Where did it happen?
Yeah.
And I kind of like this whole Connor and Grayson. I think it was Grayson. Sibling rivalry.
Competing.
There's a bunch of sibling rivalries. And like later on, Frank puts up Meacham and Stamper as a sibling rival.
Right.
So there's all this notion you bring two boys in and you get them to fight and one of them will win. kind of thing. And so Claire then is in and she talks to the First Lady and we start to see that they have a relationship, a friendship that she's going to start manipulating. And Grayson, in his end run around Connor and trying to improve things, this is very clever. He goes to the abortionist's wife and makes sure to get all of his files for the time period covering Claire.
Private journal.
Because this was an illegal abortion. It was off the books, right? And so it's like, we can't have any record, right? And just like, give it to me. And we also find out here that this is the cause that Claire is pushing up to is a civilian oversight of sexual assault in the military. Mm-hmm. She's pushing a bill for that, and that's gonna be her cause. And Grayson wants to help her with that cause, and he wants to get rid of Connor. And he said, "This guy's a great player." He says, "Put me in charge along with him, right? And put us in co in charge. He won't want to work with me, and then I'll get him a nice job.
Yeah,
right. And I won't, he won't, and he'll leave happy, and no one will look manipulative, and this will be great. So Claire's very impressed by this. I thought she was going to like stick to the chair. It's like, oh, little man, see, the, I see we're impressing mother.
You're yeah. very smart.
Very smart. Lucas, okay, so he's doing more anonymous, you know, hacker stuff, right? It's like, it's personal for me. I don't have a choice. You have a choice. I don't have a choice. And they're like one-upping each other, and yeah. he doesn't have a choice. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, Green comes in to brace the hacker, and he's got the guinea pig.
Yes.
And it's like, I'm going to crush your guinea pig.
Okay.
Now bark like a dog for me while I crush your guinea pig.
This was without a doubt the silliest scene.
That was the silliest scene.
In the whole season. It just was so dope.
The bottom of the season here.
Yeah, come on. Crushing a guinea pig.
This is the one that made me feel like, did you guys end the shoot day thinking to yourself, nailed it? Did you really think that?
We just shot what they wrote, man.
Yeah.
I would have liked...
This is some serious Dick Tracy.
You should have at least pulled a gun on the guinea pig. That might have been more fun.
If I was Gavin, the guy who had his foot on my guinea pig, he would have suddenly been 3 months behind on his mortgage,
right.
not paid his kids private school,
right. yeah.
credit card fraud.
Yeah.
I would have fucked his life so bad.
Yeah.
Now, I forget,
step on my guinea pig.
Kitty porn in his work account.
Yeah.
There
you go.
But so this is the lowest scene, certainly in the hacker subplot, if not the entire series. The guinea pig torture. But then we have the highest scene in the hacker subplot, which is Lucas goes into the server farm with his little thumb drive, tries to bullshit talk his way around, like leaning up against the server, and gets immediately busted, and we immediately find out that this entire whole thing is a big Scooby-Doo. Right. Fake out by the FBI, and it's like, okay, thank you that this is not real. This, you know,
you couldn't
thumb
just
drive
stick a
ridiculousness.
Thing into
yeah,
AT&T's.
No, you were set up completely. Okay, good.
Right, yeah.
And we saw that he was being set up, but it's like, okay, this is where the drop happens. Okay,
right.
Okay, so that does it for chapter 18, and so we are moving on now, I believe, to Miss Danielle.
Oh yeah. All right. At the start of chapter 19, the heat is on in Washington, and the utility costs are through the roof. Tusk has lost the president's ear to Frank, but Frank plays dumb about it. Mm. Frank continues to insist that they keep a strong stance against the Chinese. The Americans are seeing a 3-time increase on energy rates, and it will go to 5-fold soon. So this is serious business. Frank suggests that the president cut out the Chinese by buying Sumerian through a third party, forcing the Chinese to raise their prices worldwide or lower them to keep direct flow with the U.S. His plan includes stockpiling Sumerian and quietly selling off the excess at a subsidy for nuclear power. Remy goes to see Francis at his home. Remy tells him there's nothing to gain from locking horns with Tusk. Remy asks him if he's trying to send a message, and Frank says yes. That stubbornness is far more costly than obedience.
I love that one.
That was awesome.
One of my favorite lines.
Frank is practicing his pitching skills with Meacham in the backyard.
That's
Frank pitches and Meacham catches.
Ooh, baby.
Frank throws like a girl.
That was faux play.
Did you catch it?
Claire taunts Francis about his first attempt at public pitching.
That was awesome.
That was cute.
Frank encourages the president to see Tusk as an adversary to be reckoned with and urges putting him in his place.
Yep.
Frank arrives at Freddy's. Freddy says it is too hot on the... I love this one. It's so hot on the pavement that it will fry your dick off from 3 feet below. Now, I want to do measurements. How long is his dick? 3 feet sounds like long... I don't know.
Freddie was the Russo of this season, and I really hated to see him go.
Yeah.
you know?
He has a tough time.
Yeah. Had a good time with Freddie.
Goes to from dizzying highs to painful
spirally
lows.
Freddie's other really good line that I liked, it says, "When you get hot and sweaty, it make you ripe and ready."
Never heard that one. It's pretty
Never
good.
Heard that one, Freddie.
Pretty good.
The simple lesson that you can't strong arm the president of the United States. I don't know what that meant. Okay, with Raymond being invited to the White House, Frank needs to find a way of preventing him from swaying the president to his side. Mm-hmm. Frank and Doug are monitoring the situation with Tom and Lucas. Doug arranges a meet with Frank and Tusk so he can intimidate Tusk. Tom meets with Frank about Russo's death. Frank says, why don't you just ask me if I when I stop strangling people's pets?
Yes.
I like that.
Did y'all get that part?
I got that because he strangled someone's pet at the beginning of the series. Yeah.
That's the opening scene.
Yeah, that's the opening scene.
I think he more snapped its neck than strangled it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He put it out of its misery. But yeah.
Right. Yeah.
He gave that great speech about there's good pain and there's bad pain.
Yeah. Yeah. Did he break its neck? I thought he suffocated it.
He snapped it.
He snapped it? Okay.
Yeah, it was like a... Yeah, you know?
Right.
Oh,
it was off the screen. Yeah.
Right. It was below below the frame. Lost my spot.
Oh, well, this is so...
He attempts to downplay anything they have used against him and who refused to respond to any of it. Uh-huh. So Frank's just like, shh, I'm not going there.
Right.
And then he asks him outright, did you kill Peter Russo? Did you kill Zoe Barnes?
Right.
Frank and Raymond meet, and Frank accuses him of deliberately inflating energy rates, which is illegal.
So let's talk about this is a reporter. This is Tom. This is Lucas's friend.
Mm. Right.
He's working for Lucas. He comes in and you know, basically, Frank shoots him down the way you would. It's like, you're paranoid. Right. Are you asking me if I'm committing murder?
He's very good. I like the way Kevin Spacey
and it really feels like later on, like, Tom goes that way. It's like, yeah, I think Lucas might be insane.
Yeah.
Or of, it sounds so insane, no matter how true it is, nobody's ever going
to
believe it.
Right, I'm trying to make it sound true, but... Right.
And you're putting yourself in such physical jeopardy.
Right.
For something that's just like...
It's like True Detective. You need the videotape.
Right.
Well, in order to persuade people that this is not crazy.
Lucas says to Janine, he's going to get away with it, isn't he?
Right.
And she's like...
No, and this is how. Yeah. It's like, yeah, because his story holds up.
Right. You know, yeah, it works.
Didn't mean to derail her.
It's okay.
Okay.
And then Tusk says, I personally asked you to convince Raymond... Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, not Tusk. The president says, I personally asked you to convince Raymond to pull back on China, and you post... Oh, no, wait, this is the other way around.
Okay. It gets confusing.
Yeah,
sometimes.
You know, it was Tusk. So Tusk asked Frank to have the president pull back, and Frank went behind his back and told the president not to and sabotage the summit. And then he says, do not try and spin me, Frank.
Right.
I'm too old to tango.
I love that one. Yeah.
That was pretty good.
And then he tells him to accept the subsidies with the FERC.
Right.
Frank steps up to the mound to throw the first pitch, and the lights go out on Camden Yard.
Because Raymond Tusk is Lex Luthor.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, he got the timing perfectly.
I'll just shut down my power pants.
It makes me wonder, should he even let him embarrass himself first?
On the pitch, maybe he didn't know he would. Maybe Frank, don't take that chance. Yeah. And also, I actually don't know that he timed it. You can't time that.
It implies that Tusk is sitting there by his power switch on a cell phone.
Yeah, there's not a big switch in his basement.
In the stadium going, he's going up to the mound right now. Do it!
Right.
You know, but that's okay.
Now, was it Camden Yard or was it National?
Well, then the president...
They kept saying Camden Yard.
They said Camden Yard. Okay. Yeah. Oh,
cool. So, go Orioles.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
So Frank flips it around to make it look like Tusk is the one double playing the president, and he urges the president to seize the plants from Raymond. Mm-hmm. Frank meets with Tusk at Freddy's and insists it's in his best interest to tell Linda he'll accept the subsidy.
And Tusk, one of the wealthiest men in the world, cannot get an iced tea to save his life.
No. Nope.
Yes.
Nope.
Oh, they're all drinking iced tea. Nope, we don't have any.
Nope.
And Jackie and Remy are sleeping together.
We see that Jackie and Remy.
Right.
That comes up later.
That one.
Yeah.
And then he says, the ball's in your court, as they say. Right. Lucas. Lucas is being offered a plea bargain, but he wants to go to trial to get everything out in the open. Otherwise, he knows everything will be hushed up. He's shown the sext pics of Zoe that were found in his apartment that Frank took. And he claims the VP took them. And they're like, yeah, right. Who's going to believe that? And then the DA says that they're proof of his obsession with Miss Barnes. The charges he's up against are one count of fraud under Section E for breaking into the data center, one count of stealing a password from the Herald, 10 years per count to be served concurrently, eligible for parole in 7. So his attorney pushes him to take the deal as the cards they have stacked against him paint a pretty bad picture. Right. Lucas insists he's going to trial if he doesn't get a chance to talk to Tom Hammerschmidt.
Which is the other reporter.
Which is the reporter, his old boss at the Herald.
Right.
Lucas meets with Tom and says he wants to wait to see the article's reaction before he makes his decision about his legal fate. Tom agrees to see it through, but doesn't make any promises about the outcome. He's going to report it as he finds it, and if Lucas gets caught up in it, it is what it is.
Right.
Tom is trying to reach out to Janine. Tom brings his article to jail for Lucas to read, and he asks to speak to Janine alone. Janine is there this time.
Right.
Lucas is pissed that he's lied to cover his own ass against the feds. That she lied to cover her own ass against the feds, and she took a deal kind of thing.
Because she gets braced by Nathan Green.
Yeah.
He comes in, and he's like, you know, he starts intimidating her. And we can mess up your life, and you won't be able to take care of your mom.
Right.
So even if you beat whatever rap we throw on you, we can fuck your life up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And then Claire meets the first lady and uses the opportunity to plant a seed that Christina can't be trusted because she has a history of boss screwing.
Yeah, I love that. It was so brilliant. I was like, yeah, was so wow, cool. She's really involved in this plan.
He really tapped into the first lady's insecurities.
Yeah.
And then Christina goes to see Claire. Claire encourages Christina to approach the first lady and, you know, show her how in she is and how she's there for her.
Be enthusiastic.
And, yeah, mm-hmm. and do sure. whatever you can to be creepy and freak show out her the
your tits.
First lady.
Yeah, really.
Show her your tits.
And then
pretty
we see,
much, yeah.
And then we see Rachel masquerading as Mary Poppins at the church daycare.
Yeah. Right.
Doug checks up on her and warns her about the risks of forming relationships, meeting Lisa
or Frank.
Or Frank.
That's
true.
I'm saying
that's true.
She
doesn't have
owns
a, yeah.
onto something there.
And then Doug reveals his attraction for Rachel, but practices self restraint. Was my take on it, but now mm-hmm. I kind of see Sion's take. And then Jackie and Remy go to dinner and begin to align against Frank. The morning after with Remy and Jackie rather unconvincingly states that last night didn't happen and did not not to expect special treatment, is yeah. Jackie telling Remy. And it's clear it must have been good, but look on her face.
So here's a question.
Must have been damn
here's
good.
A question. Was Jackie sexually assaulted in the military?
I have that feeling, perhaps.
I have that feeling from the way that she revolves this relationship with Remy. And she talks about, I've never been with anybody for more than 6 months. I orbit
right.
around.
Yeah.
She's very
like
dedicated
some...
to the military. Civilian oversight is off the table. Never mind civilian courts. How about just civilian oversight? No, no, no.
Right.
She's protecting. I really got the sense
right.
that she's been raped.
Maybe.
She definitely intensely guards any vulnerability.
Yeah.
Right, and that she's working it through with the masochism and everything else as
right.
well.
Yes. Right.
Okay. We'll see.
We'll see. Well, I mean, we might never see. It's just more of a subtext.
They probably will in season yeah. 3 if that's going to be an issue.
She might become the Secretary of Defense and begin
her
own whole way of handling things.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah.
And then Remy says it's her voice that attracted him to her and turns him on, and she's clearly flattered by that.
Right.
That and her legs. And then Janine is hiding out at her mom's house when the FBI find her. They interview her about Lucas. They want to know her level of involvement with Lucas's investigation and
right.
want her to sign a statement lying about what truly happened. And they threaten her with aiding an act of cyber terrorism.
Yeah, so this is why she throws him under the bus.
Yeah,
that was
later
Green
on.
Who did
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Yep. And that's right. what I've got for chapter 19.
Very good. Okay, so that concludes our first episode of our wrap up. If you want, you can just continue on into part 2, which we'll be publishing shortly. I don't know what to say.
Soon.
Soon. So until then, say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight.
All right, see you next time.